Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
It's hard to read the news these days without asking yourself, how did we get here? Fiasco is a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. In our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which resulted in a high-stakes stalemate, ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Newton Group Transfer. They are here to help you if you're stuck in a timeshare. These stories from people who have these timeshares and can't get out of them, they're shocking. These timeshare companies, not all of them, but so many, they get their hooks into you and you can't give them up. You can't give them up. Or they'll do things like they charge you thousands of dollars. One girl, she got past her timeshare when her mother passed away. She gets past the timeshare, doesn't want the timeshare, doesn't use the timeshare. They tell her she can get out of it for $4,000. She has to come up with a $4,000 check. This is not right. It's unjust. And Newton Group Transfers is here to help you. If you are in a timeshare and want out or know someone who is, call 888-845-3773. That's 888-84-JESSE, or go to timesharejesse.com. Newton Group Transfer. They will help you out. It's been a rough 50 days. 50 days Joe Biden's been president. Man, he has not had a good time of it. We have a big crisis on the border. We're going to dig into that. And a couple countries you're not thinking about, Venezuela and Cuba. What's going on down there? All that's coming up next on I'm Right. You know what sucks? Leadership matters. And maybe you like that. I hate it. I've always hated it. I've told you that old saying on the show before. I didn't come up with it, although I'll take credit for it because I don't know who came up with it. It's better to be an army of donkeys led by a lion than an army of lions led by a donkey. Leadership in this life is really, really, really important. In your business, in your country, in your military, in your church, in your whatever the case may be, whoever is leading the show matters. You and I love politics and hate politics, if we're being honest. It's kind of a weird relationship, but why? Why do you care about this? Why do I care about this? I do the same things you do. Wake up in the morning, let's see what's going on out there. Why? Because it's really important. We are blessed. You and I, we are blessed. We reside in the wealthiest, most powerful country in the world. It's the best place in the world to live right now. Nowhere else you'd rather be. Who leads it really, really matters. It's extremely important, not just for us, for the world, who's in charge. That's why we care. I like dealing in politics because the stakes are high. I had a conversation with another media friend of mine this morning. And we were saying, you know, people complain about doing political media. Sometimes they get burnt out and whatnot, and I get all that. I'm not talking on anyone for that, but we were talking about how terrible would it be if you only did movie radio or TV or sports. Look, sports is a great example because I love sports. Sports radio and all that other stuff. You have to show up every day if you're doing what I do and pretend like something really important happened. But how often did something really important happen in sports? Here, because of what we do, because of what you're interested in, what I'm interested in, every single day, something important did happen. We're on the 50th day of Joe Biden's presidency. I'm not surprised at how it's gone. You're not surprised at how it's gone. People knew he was not physically and mentally up for the job. But I think it's fair to say this has gone even worse than we thought. They're hiding him even more than I thought they would hide him. And when he does come out from his hole, he never looks good. He looks lost. You heard Nan Hayworth. What'd she talk about when it comes to Joe? She was right, by the way. It's not just how he talks that's concerning. He always looks lost. And look, we're not poking fun at some old man. That's the president of the United States of America. That is our leader. And while I'm never going to agree with the things a Democrat president does, man, I at least want him functional. Don't you? It matters a lot that he's functional. This is his first 50 days. Here's a little highlight reel for you.
No one can tell me that if had been a group of Black Lives Matter protesting yesterday, they wouldn't have been treated very, very differently than the mob of thugs that stormed the Capitol. We all know that's true. Representatives Shirley Jackson Lee, Al Green, Sylvia Garcia, Lizzie Pinelli, Pinnell, and what am I doing here? I'm going to lose track here. And
if we fail to act, there will be a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the coming months as this pandemic rages on, because there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months.
I think there's a growing awareness that, injecting bleach into your system doesn't do it for you. I'm being, think about all the ridiculous things. And there is online still, there are those who are the vaccine
deniers.
When you and I, I shouldn't say it that way, as you remember, but when you and I talked last, we talked about, it's one thing to have the vaccine, which we didn't have when we came into office, but a vaccinator. How do you get the vaccine into someone's arm?
Don't jump, we need you. All right.
And then if I could
Did you receive a briefing about the border today?
Yes, I did.
What did you learn?
A lot.
Is there a crisis at the border, sir?
Please, everybody.
I won't be able to handle it. And I want to thank the former general. I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done to try to implement what we've just talked about, and for recommending these two women for promotion. Thank you all. May God bless you all, and may God protect our troops.
That's 50 days. That's not a 4-year term, an 8-year term. That's 50 days. That's the leader of the free world. And as I've explained to you, bad people watch too. It's not just good people who sit there in their countries afar and dream of one day maybe becoming an American. Of course, that happens too, but really, really, really bad, evil people watch when the president speaks. And what do you think they see? What do you think they say to themselves? A group of bad men in China watching the president speak. When he's done and they turn the television off, do you think they turn to each other and say, "We better be careful with that guy. He might get us." Or do you think they turn the TV off and say, "Oh man, now is the time"? I'm worried. I am worried. Genuinely worried. And of course, the media is trying to cover for something we can all see. We all just watched in that video him forgetting the name of his defense secretary and the name of the Pentagon. The president of the United States forgot the name of the Secretary of Defense in the Pentagon. And we have Snopes fact-checking him. They're running fact checks. Wow, I mean, not really. Gosh. And it doesn't matter how much they cover, because anytime he pokes his head out, people can see. I mean, well, you all have eyes. Even Democrats have eyes. And look, the numbers aren't good. This is a new Rasmussen poll. 52% of voters are concerned with the lack of a press conference. 50% are not confident Biden is physically and mentally up for the job. 30% of the country has accepted that he's going to resign before 2024. And we have big issues happening right now. I know I've brought this up to you all week, but I'm not going to let it go because this problem, it's snowballing. It's not tapering off. We have a migrant surge at the border, and Joe Biden and his administration are directly responsible for it. Not kind of responsible, not just a victim of circumstances. They ran on this open borders crap. The second they get in there, they went ahead and executive order this and executive order that. And again, they're watching. Migrants down south are watching. They see what's happening. Now, our Border Patrol guys are, one, being overwhelmed right away. Two, they don't have the housing to keep the people, so they're dropping them at American cities all over the country. Yuma, Arizona, Brownsville, Texas, Chicago, Illinois. They're just dropping off droves of illegal immigrants. They're not tested for coronavirus, this apparent virus that was going to end the world. Well, now we're just letting people flood in. And honestly, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, it actually gets worse from there. The Biden administration's response to this surge, to this crisis, is not stepping up to the microphone and saying, stay where you are. We don't want you to come. You will not be let in. Yet just yesterday, Jen Psaki gets up and gives a press conference. And what's she say? What's her response to it? Well, I mean, we're giving them medical care and we're giving them education and mental health care. Almost putting up a flag that says, please, come, bring your friends. There's no way Joe Biden possesses what it takes to lead us out of this. This is a big deal. And these are real people who are coming, and they're being abused when they're coming. And there are real Americans, more importantly, because we have to watch out for America and Americans first. More importantly, there are Americans across the country who will be hurt by this, by employment, with disease. People never talk about that. With hospital closures. Do you know why there are so many hospital closures near the southern border? Would you actually like to know why? Has anyone ever told you why? Allow me to tell you why. Because illegal immigrants use the emergency room system as just a family doctor because they don't have health insurance, obviously. And we have laws in America that say you must treat illegal immigrants when they come in. Yeah, that's right. So hospitals are constantly giving out medical care that they're never compensated for because as soon as they give it out, poof, illegal immigrant is gone. I had a buddy on Border Patrol, I'm not going to go into where, show up at the hospital one time in his Border Patrol uniform just to see a friend. His friend had had a baby, just showed up at the hospital to see a buddy, shows up in the middle of the night, walks in the emergency room. The emergency room is full, goes in, sees his buddy, said he was in there for 5 minutes, kissed the baby, everything looks good, walks back out, emergency room, empty, as soon as they saw the uniform. The costs for this are high. They're putting those kids with your kids. How bad is it? Well, here are the numbers. 100,441 attempted crossings in February alone. That's the highest since 06. 29,792 unaccompanied children. Some of the centers are up 500%. Arrests down 60%. Oh, I forgot to mention, on top of all that, we have this organization in the United States of America. Maybe you've heard of them. It's called ICE. They're the guys actually charged, once the illegals come in, with rounding them up, going around arresting them. The Joe Biden administration kneecapped ICE. They don't even have the authority to do that now. We're being flooded. We've taken away our ability to kick them out. And this is the kind of messaging we have.
You keep repeating, this is not the time to come. Mm-hmm. Will there be a... Isn't that sending the signal that there will be a time to come? Just wait.
Well, first, to be clear, even these unaccompanied children who come across the border, who we've talked about, we want to keep safe. We want to ensure they are in shelters where there is access to educational services, legal services, health services. When we say it's not the time to come now, the reason is this is a we are still digging our way out of a dismantled, immoral, and ineffective immigration policy that was being implemented by the last administration. We're not trying to close our borders. We are trying to keep create an effective, moral, humane system. It's going to take some time to do that.
We're not trying to close our borders. They just come out and say it now. And you heard what she said. Giving them schooling, medical care, mental health care. Oh, but don't come yet. No. You just told them to come. Yeah. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. Now, I'm not your dad. I'm not going to do that thing where I lecture you about you need to quit dipping. I'm not your dad, I'm not your wife, I'm not doing that. I'll just tell you this. I dipped for a long time. However much you love dipping tobacco, I love it more, trust me. And I needed help to quit. I didn't even want to quit, I just knew I had to. Jake's Mint Chew is a healthy way to do it. That gives you a bridge from doing it to being free of it. What is it? Well, it's dip. Only it's tobacco-free, nicotine-free, sugar-free. They have a bunch of different flavors of long cut. They have different flavors of CBD pouches. Fits right there in your lip. Really takes the edge off. If you really want to quit, go to Jake's Mint Chew. JakesMintChew.com. Use the promo code Jesse. That's J-E-S-S-E. Gives you 20% off. We'll be back. Primaries. How often do you hear me come on this show and tear on the GOP? But like I've always said, don't just bring me problems, bring me solutions. You should be running in primaries. And of course, whenever you run in a primary, you're going to have the GOP snipping at you, telling you you're being a traitor or whatnot. Screw that and screw them. We have a bunch of dirtball Republicans out there in this country, and we have to bounce them out because we need a better Republican Party to take on the Democrats. So I saw this ad. I'm pretty sure all of you have seen this ad from Catalina Lauf in Illinois, which obviously the ad looked good enough. I'll play it for you in a second. But it is a bit appealing since she's going against Adam Kinzinger. Here's the ad.
I never thought I'd primary a fellow Republican. But is Congressman Adam Kinzinger really a Republican anymore? He isn't. And we have the proof. The reality is a majority of our party is united around the America First movement. My name is Catalina Lauf, and this is Adam Kinzinger, a weak-kneed establishment Republican who cares more about his next MSNBC appearance than the voters who elected him. Not grounded in our home of Illinois. He looks for fame instead of remembering who he works for and the voters who elected him. This is a reality for Adam. One out of every three votes he casts in Congress is with Nancy Pelosi. Instead of focusing on what really matters, instead of being in our fight, Adam betrayed his constituents for a life in the D.C. swamp.
Weak-kneed. She had me at weak-kneed. I love people who just talk like normal human beings. Joining me now, Catalina Lauf. Catalina, why are you running against Adam Kinzinger?
Thanks so much for having me, Jesse. Well, it's so clear, and it's now even clearer considering he voted with Pelosi and Schumer and the Biden administration on a gun control bill. People like Adam Kinzinger clearly do not understand that our party, the people who voted in the Republican primary, already made the referendum against the establishment, against the rhinos, back in 2016 when we first supported President Trump. Obviously, we elected him in 2020. And now, I'm sorry, obviously not in 2020, but now it's so clear that this is where the party is going. And you have rhinos like Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger that are just completely out of touch with their constituents. And on top of that, are voting with Democrats. It's like, go ahead and be a Democrat if you're going to be supporting them. Get out of our party and let the people decide the movement so that we can actually make change, because the Democrats are destroying our country day by day.
Explain to me why even a dirtball like Kinzinger would vote for a gun bill like that. Is your district, I'm sure people are aware of where Illinois is, but they probably don't know your district specifically. Is this some purple district, kind of blue? Is he trying to appeal to a bunch of Democrats? What's your district like?
No, it's absolutely not, which is what, you know, people cannot, anybody who is voting against what their constituents want, especially in hard Republican areas, the district is, you know, one of the few collar counties left representing outside of Cook County. And one by one, the Democrats are slowly flipping these Republican seats. But it's actually, the whole area outside of Cook County is actually pretty Republican. So when you have your own representative going against what the majority of his constituents are actually, the interests of his constituents and what they believe, it's so clear that somebody like Adam Kinzinger is, you know, so concerned with his own personal ambitions than actually representing the people that he who elected him.
Catalina, a long time ago, I ran as a young hothead Marine for Congress just because I was just ticked off and wanted to do something about it. And I remember the powers that be in the Republican Party were not pleased I was challenging one of their boys. How have you been received so far?
Now, look, the Republican swamp establishment is everywhere. It's not just in DC with the more national parties and the organizations. It's in every single state. And so we pride ourselves in the campaign of being the disruptors, being these, you know, somebody that actually wants to support the people and vote and be a lion for their interests. And obviously the establishment doesn't like that because they want somebody who's going to be in lockstep with them, vote and cut deals with the Democrats. And that's just not who I am. That's not what a lot of these America First candidates who won in 2020, that's certainly not the way that President Trump taught us to be either. And I think people are so ready for authentic, they're so ready for servant leaders, people that are not going to cower to the establishment and cave to the mob. So they're obviously scared, they're threatened, and you know, it has been a challenge, but we are, it doesn't matter, you know, it's ultimately what the voters want. And so we're more than happy to not only listen to the constituents and speak with them about what matters to them, but also have the resources and have the ground game to be able to go up against an incumbent, because the incumbents and the establishment will do everything that they can to protect them. So we need formidable challengers that can have the resources, have the ground game, have the support to be able to combat that.
Why do this? You're obviously a young, I'm assuming, successful human being. Why do you want to go to Washington, D.C.? Washington, D.C. sucks.
You know, our country's worth fighting for, and I, you know, praise so many people like yourself who have fought in our military and overseas, and now it's so important that we have people step up. It's our civic duty to step up and defend what's happening here in our country. The left is getting more and more progressive. The culture wars, from a policy perspective, everything that the Biden administration and prior Democrats are just pushing, it is getting to a very scary point. And when I talk to people, everyday voters, the constituents, people in deep state, deep blue states like Illinois, there is a real fear of the type of ideology people like AOC, the Biden administration, and the Democrat Party today are trying to push for the future of our country. Look, my family came here legally. We come from the private sector, small business. I'm an everyday American. And if it takes real people, everyday Americans now, to step up. It's our civic duty to defend the values of which our country was founded upon. We need to defend our country within. And that's why I'm doing it. And I'm so proud to do it. It is not easy, but it is worth it.
What's your favorite food?
Oh, God. pizza? Italian beef?
All right. All right. With meat on top, it's not one of these woman vegetarian pizzas, right? It's like meat on top.
You know what? I'm more of a cheese gal, but I'm not a vegetarian.
Catalina Love, where can people go? What's your website?
CatalinaForCongress.com and Catalina Lauf on all social media platforms.
Thank you. Have a good one. Good luck.
Thank you.
Now, I understand that home title theft is not exactly on the front of your mind. And full disclosure, it was never on the front of my mind, ever. I didn't know it existed. If you had asked me, let's see, it's been about a year now. If you had asked me about a year ago, I would have said, oh yeah, my home title, it's in the bank vault. It's just a piece of paper, right? Your home title is not a piece of paper. Your home title is online now. It is an online world, and it is vulnerable. Anything online can be hacked. That's way out of my technological capability, but apparently it's easy for them to get your title. That's how easy it is. And it's easy for them to forge your signature on it. Now, what do they do with it from there? They go take a loan out against it, a big one. They take the money and run. Guess where those bills start going? You. And your home insurance will not pay this back. At best, you will have to spend tens of thousands of dollars with a lawyer trying to get the loan unwound. At worst, they're going to knock at your door and kick you out of your home, unless you have home title lock. Home title lock will shut it down the second they detect tampering. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code RADIO. That gets you 30 free days of protection. We'll be back. We need some intelligence on this show. We're certainly not getting it out of me, so we need it from other people. That's why we're going now to Dr. David Grantham. He is the author of the book Consequences, an Intelligence Officer's War. He's also a senior fellow at the Center for a Free Society. What's going on in our military?
Well, there's changes in perspective, changes in obviously administration. So right now we face a laundry list of foes and adversaries that are not operating like they used to. And I think our military is built from, where, you know, we're always fighting the last war. So I think some of it's philosophical, but I think a lot of it's just structural. We really do have to adapt to the new landscape, the new threat landscape, which isn't necessarily state actors. It's networks, criminal networks, criminal organizations, criminalized states like Venezuela. That's the landscape now, and the military is going to have to be responsive to that.
In what ways are we behind? I mean, I know about how good our fighting force is and our equipment and stuff like that is, but as you mentioned, we're fighting the last war, which is the norm. Countries have done this in the history of mankind. In what ways are we behind?
Well, I think the flexibility and our focus is probably the two things. Flexibility meaning we really do have to be responsive to networks that blend licit and illicit activity. We have to be responsive to criminal states who, like Venezuela, who doesn't have the capability to go toe-to-toe with us, but they're quite capable and quite effective with asymmetric warfare, using things like migration, as we're seeing now, using drugs to combat their adversaries like the United States. And never mind, they're essentially underwritten by China, Russia, Cuba. So that's one thing, is being flexible to those things. And then, you know, the security posture in general is going to be more localized as we go forward. Like right now with the migration stuff on the border, national security issues are becoming local issues. That's going to be difficult for the military to respond to. You can't restructure the military to occupy states. States are going to have to take a greater role in what used to be an almost... They have to take a greater role in understanding how that affects their local communities.
Okay, when it comes to a bad actor like Venezuela, I've heard this story before about how they're involved in migration. Would you mind, as best you can, laying that out for people so they can understand that? Because that doesn't make sense to a lot of people.
Yeah, the concept is really, it's called forced migration. Some people characterize it as the weaponization of the needy. And this isn't a new thing, but it has become more pronounced as a more effective tool as of late. So essentially you have a government, I'm gonna simplify this for the sake of time and understanding it, but it would be effectively a government or an organization incentivizing people to, like caravans, to gather, move north, overwhelm the border, overwhelm the security system of a given country like the United States. And then as we're preoccupied with that, other drugs come in, cartels move in, even, you know, heaven forbid, terrorists move over the border. There's a lot of opportunities there. So the use of people to overwhelm your adversary is not a new concept, but it's something that is coming back around.
David, what are we doing about it? What was Trump doing about it? What's the Biden administration doing about it? If this is something we know Venezuela's doing, obviously we have the power to hurt them in several ways, or not that I think we should be dropping bombs on Venezuela or something. Sure. What are we doing, or what should we be doing?
I think the Trump administration had the right approach in targeted sanctions against individuals within the Maduro regime who make money off of this. There is a philosophy behind their structure, their ideas, and it's not something that's isolated to Venezuela. We call it the Bolivarian Threat Network, and this is connected through Cuba, Bolivia, Nicaragua. There's several supporters of Venezuela, so they present a threat in that they can remain in power so long as the finances and the revenue keeps coming in. And I think the Trump administration intended as best they could to target those sanctions while trying to avoid, you know, harming the Venezuelan people, which, mind you, 5.5 million Venezuelans have left since 2014. They're estimating within the next year or two, 8 million will leave. That will eventually come north, and that's something we're have to face. But the Trump administration tried that, and while I think that is as effective as you can, it's got to be a regional strategy. And the Trump administration, I believe, also tried that, and to less success, I think, than the targeted sanctions. You have to get the region on board. You have to get these countries around Venezuela on board. Colombia has been a big supporter of the U.S. in this effort. But frankly, when you have, you know, several countries that still support the Venezuelan regime, it's going to be very hard to move them out.
I think people will be surprised to hear you bring up Cuba more than once. People just don't think about Cuba anymore unless you're talking about the 1960s. Fidel Castro is gone. What's going on with Cuba now?
Cuba's in a tough spot in some ways because they have a codependency. First with the Soviet Union. Obviously, Soviet Union went away. That codependency shifted. Now it was when Hugo Chavez came to power in Venezuela in 99, their codependency became that with Hugo Chavez. And now with Hugo Chavez passing away, Maduro being in charge, and Cuba losing a lot of access to the valuable resources Venezuela could provide when it was a functioning state, has now put them in a precarious position where they are now others are capitalizing on that need for codependency, such as China, Russia, and Iran. And the problem with that situation in Cuba, very much like Venezuela, is the threat they present on an asymmetric scale, asymmetric warfare, but it's also who they're introducing into the region, who's able to capitalize on their needs. We see it during COVID. I mean, China rushed in with all kinds of COVID supplies and quote unquote medicine. It was a soft dictatorship. There was never an intent to truly help Latin America so much as get a foothold in Latin America, making them dependent on the Chinese. So, I mean, it's kind of a very broad and big answer, but the point is there's codependency among these nations that are adversarial to the United States and these regimes that are adversarial. And what that does is that introduces people that countries that actually could, in a way, go toe-to-toe with the United States.
And I know this, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, just one final thing. What does China get out of Cuba? I mean, I get that China wants a foothold everywhere it can. What does Cuba actually bring China? Anything significant?
That's a good question. Well, I think logistically, it's a prime location. I think Cuba's always been a prime location. They've had sugar, obviously, tobacco, and the Soviet Union supplied or relied on that sugar for a little bit. But I think it's primarily location, and after that, it begins with relationships within the region. Cuba is for their ideology, they are the big kid on the block. Hugo Chavez wanted to model himself after Castro. Those in the region that subscribe to the Bolivarian way of thinking, the socialist centralized government way of thinking, Castro is kind of the idol for the nation. So in one way, it's practical logistics. In another way, it's influence. Cuba could get you in the door in places where you may not be able to just walk into.
David Grantham, thank you so much. That was a wealth of information. I appreciate you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Told you we had smart people coming. Hang on. Happy anniversary! Kind of. In case you're wondering what the anniversary is, this is the one-year anniversary of them turning out the lights on the world for coronavirus. Yes, that's right. It's our one-year anniversary of worldwide panic. And no, I'm not going to do what everybody thinks I'm going to do. And that's get on here and say everybody should have listened to me day one. You know, day one, when they said, oh, we're going to shut things down for 15 days. And everybody and their brother on the left and the right said, oh, okay, let's do that. And I stood up and said, I'm sorry, what? What do you mean shut things down? You don't just turn an economy on and off, for one. Two, you don't have the freedom to shut people down. This is not, wait, what? And I felt like I was losing my mind. Yeah, that was day one. And 1 year later, you see the destruction we have. But I'm not going to do that. You know, I love to point out when I'm right, but I'm not going to do that now. I am going to do this. Let's take this one-year anniversary to look back on everything that happened, everything that came from it, and let's learn a lesson. One, the system. When the system gets its momentum going to convince you of a gigantic lie or a gigantic panic, it can be very, 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 very difficult to stand up against said panic. Let me tell you, if I'm not an unthinking, unfeeling sociopath, there's no way I could have stood up to the heat that I got from saying, we're not shutting down anything. What? No, go get some answers and come back to me. But that's easy for me to say because I don't have a soul. You do have a soul. But next time the system tries to sell you on mass panic, you have to think this way, you must do this or everyone's going to die, you don't have to fall for it. In fact, if they're all saying one thing, next time that happens, and it will happen again, I promise you, the next time they're all saying one thing, you say something else. Or just pause. Don't jump in with the mob and run away and panic. Ah, the sky's falling. Just stop and think. Ask yourself, does this make sense? And I don't want you to become a cynical jerk like me. That's my job. It's your job to be sweet and innocent. But maybe next time that happens, maybe ask yourself who benefits from all this. Who benefits from all this? I mean, who's benefited from coronavirus? Should we go down the list? Well, it's not even arguable. Without coronavirus panic, Donald Trump is still president of the United States. Why don't we start right there? That embarrassing opening we had of the show of 50 days of Joe Biden wandering around the mall, that's all just stuff we joke about that we didn't have to experience if there's no coronavirus, because Donald Trump's booming economy sweeps him right back into the White House, frankly, without much effort at all. So let's start right there. Donald Trump's still president. All the kids are still in school. There haven't been these massive job disruptions. The restaurant industry, especially the smaller, independently owned restaurant industry, still booming the way it was before. New York City still thriving. Other major cities still thriving. There are no Antifa / Black Lives Matter riots this summer without these lockdowns. If you think that didn't contribute to the rage out there that came out, you are crazy. China still on their heels because now they have to experience 4 more years of Trump instead of 4 years of Joe Biden groveling at their feet. The world changes. Amazon, all the gigantic big tech guys, they don't all double their value while their small business competition goes bye-bye. They continue to have to compete just the same way they did before. You and I, we're skinnier. Let's be honest about it. It's been a fat year with a lot of this and not a whole lot of this. You know it's true. The mental health, on a serious note, spousal abuse, child abuse, those numbers are way back down where they should be. Suicides, way back down where they should be. This is alcohol abuse, drug abuse, way back down where it should be. The cost of that panic was really high. It's been a year of suffering the consequences of everybody panic. So I'm not saying that to beat anybody up. Obviously, I had some fun bragging about myself, but I'm not saying that to beat anybody up or really brag about myself. I'm saying that because you're going to experience another one of these. You will. I will. In our lifetime, the whole system, Hollywood, the media, the Democratic Party, 95% of the Republican Party, everybody and their brother, the government, the bureaucracy, they're all going to tell you, you have to do this or everyone's going to die. And the next time they do that, you sit back and say, no, I don't believe you. Let's calm down and figure it out. All right, we got more for you. Hang on. I used to have to chop wood all the time when I was a kid. And we were in Montana, and that's how we heated up our homes. You had a big wood stove or a fireplace, depending on where we were living, and no central heat, and you had to chop wood and put it in there. And my old man used to make me go out there chopping wood with him, and my arms are about that big around. And in Montana, it's like 20, 25 below. I would go out there and I'd have to chop wood until I couldn't feel my hands. And then I'd go in the truck and I'd warm up my hands enough. And then he'd drag me back out there to chop more wood. And I thought, man, this has got to be the toughest time anybody has ever had chopping wood in the history of mankind. And wow, I saw this and I was really wrong. That's amazing. Well, all right, so I had the second hardest time. I'll see you tomorrow.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of The Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Hey, what would you like? I usually, my drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, 3 olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink, the guys come in, I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
It's hard to read the news these days without asking yourself, how did we get here? Fiasco is a history podcast from the co-creators of Slow Burn. our first season, Bush v. Gore, we examine an unmistakable turning point in American politics, the 2000 election, which resulted in a high-stakes stalemate, ended with one of the most controversial rulings in Supreme Court history. So if you're trying to make sense of the present moment, check out Fiasco, Bush v. Gore. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.